The Gist. We're back, focusing on GLP-1 enhancing drugs. Why another GLP-1 blog? Because new information keeps pouring out. Plus, these surprising drugs constitute perhaps the most exciting treatment possibility ever seen in ME/CFS, fibromyalgia, long COVID, and related diseases. They appear to have engaged the complex chronic illness experts like no others. In fact, these drugs have pretty much wowed the medical world. Created to combat obesity and diabetes, GLP-1 agonists are now being assessed in dozens of disorders. Besides maintaining blood sugar or losing weight, they are able to affect our metabolic, cardiovascular, and even neuroinflammatory systems. This blog covers a recent Renegade Research Roundtable, two studies reporting on the effects of GLP-1 agonists on people with mast cell activation syndrome, MCAS, and intracranial hypertension, and two GLP-1 long COVID trials getting underway. Dr. Dempsey described how a woman with a traumatic brain injury, or TBI, and a woman with postural orthostatic tachycardia, or POTS, responded. After being put on the full dose, 2.5 milligrams, the TBI patient experienced nausea but persevered and found that 2 to 3 hours after taking the drug, her brain fog completely disappeared, and she could focus and work like before. A POTS patient, who needed to take 2 to 3 times more time to get her college work done, reported she no longer had brain fog and was able to do her work in a third of the time. With side effects not usually a problem at low doses and improvements often seen, Dr. Dempsey and Dr. Kaufman are using these drugs very early in their patient's treatment. Dr. Kaufman said he was particularly considering doing so in his more severely ill patients. Dr. Dempsey said, "It was pretty mind-boggling to see the response and the fact that it was global, it was systemic, and pretty quick." Dr. Dempsey also noted that the drug doesn't work on all patients and that some patients cannot tolerate even the small doses being used. She does not consider these drugs cure-alls and advises that everyone, quote, "should go down this path cautiously," end quote. Dr. Kaufman's biggest concern with increasing the dose and producing side effects is not weight loss, but gut motility. On the other hand, Dr. Dempsey reported that many of her patients with gut motility issues are doing well on the low doses of the drug being used, and a mast cell paper reported that reductions in nausea were common. Kaufman believes that by reducing systemic inflammation, GLP-1 agonists are targeting one of the root causes of these diseases and helping fight reactivated pathogens such as EBV, or Epstein-Barr virus. Dr. Dempsey believes the drug binds to mast cell receptors and blocks the release of inflammatory mediators. A recent study explored the effects GLP-1 agonists had on a case series of 47 patients with mast cell activation syndrome, or MCAS. The paper reported on the, quote, "remarkably high rate of favorable responses we have seen from ad hoc use of such drugs in the cases presented here of MCAS," end quote. It stated that, quote, "overall clinical benefit," end quote, was found in 89% of patients. The 6 case reports in the paper demonstrated the wide range of effects these drugs can have. Some case reports involved MCAS patients who took the standard dose to lose weight and experienced other kinds of relief. Others included MCAS patients who benefited from low doses of the drug. See the blog. A systematic review found that these drugs might be helpful in intracranial hypertension, a condition that appears to be widespread in these diseases. One small study found they were associated with significantly reduced pain, fatigue, and opioid dependency in fibromyalgia, and you can see a link to that small study at this point in the text version of The Gist. In my experience, the biggest problem facing patients is how to use the drug. 3 possibilities exist: compounded drugs, vials, and autopens. All present issues. Because as of early 2025, Because as of early 2025, semaglutide and tirzepatide were being removed from the shortage list, they are no longer legally available to be compounded. While some compounding pharmacies may still carry them, most patients will have to rely on autopen devices which provide higher doses than typically used in ME-CFS, or vials. Because the autopens have internal mechanisms that control both the plunger travel distance and injection volume, it's not possible to accurately give yourself a half or a quarter, etc. dose. Autopens using semaglutamide or Ozempic, not the doctor's first choice, can deliver lower doses such as 0.25 to 0.5 milligrams, but not as low as these doctors are using, such as 0.1 milligrams. This is still quite a low dose. Patients might want to stay at that dose for a longer period of time, such as 2 months, before considering titrating upwards and or to leave 2 weeks instead of 1 week between doses. The normal titration time appears to be 1 month. Some countries, like Australia, have Mounjaro, the doctor's first choice, pens, which allow you to determine how much of the drug to use. The lowest Mounjaro autopen dose available in the US, though, is a whopping 2.5 milligrams. Lilly Pharmaceuticals also offers vials that allow a syringe to be used to draw out low doses. It's not clear how long they will last. It's also possible to use an insulin syringe to draw the drug out of some autopens. Some compounding pharmacies may still offer the drugs. Patients should be careful that they are translating the units correctly, as some people have injected themselves with too high concentrations of the drug. You can see more details about that in the blog. The NIH's RECOVER initiative for long COVID demonstrated great initiative by using patient and physician reports to initiate a GLP-1 agonist trial. Dr. Kaufman reported that after embracing doctors' and patients' reports and launching the trial, RECOVER will be using far higher doses, such as 0.1 to 0.25 milligrams versus 2.5 milligrams in their long COVID trial. A 1,000-person Scripps long COVID trial is doing the same. With regard to RECOVER, this is apparently because, quote, trials funded by NIH must use doses that have an established toxicology and pharmacokinetic profile already accepted by FDA. Dr. Kaufman noted that it's possible that starting at 2.5 milligrams might work. It's just that no one has tried. The mast cell paper mentioned several obese patients who tolerated the standard dose quite well. Still, it's a big risk, as Dr. Kaufman worried that so many patients will drop out that the drug will be considered a failure. The Scripps Fully Remote Long COVID Treatment, or LOCKIT, L-O-C-I-T-T, trial, has a lot going for it. Anyone in the U.S. can participate in the year-long study. No in-person visits are required. Symptom and activity trackers and smart scales will be used, and a few people will provide blood for labs. Check out if you're eligible for the trial here at the link in the text version of the gist, and check out a webinar on the study in the blog. However, the GLP-1 saga turns out, the fact that these drugs have popped up seemingly out of nowhere and have generated such excitement highlights the potential existing in the huge repurposed drug market for these diseases. And of course, repurposed drugs are drugs that are used in another condition than that for which they are approved. Looking at this new class of drugs, nobody thought, oh man, we've got to try these drugs out in ME-CFS, long COVID, or fibromyalgia. And yet, here we are. More and perhaps better GLP agonists are on the way. Support Health Rising and keep the information flowing. You can give one time or monthly at the link at the end of the text version of the gist. Thanks for listening.